This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Looking to spur redevelopment, the city of Hamilton has unveiled two programs designed to revitalize neighborhoods and improve the vitality of Hamilton's downtown core. Through the Land Bank Side Lot program, city planners hope to sell hundreds of small, municipally owned vacant lots to homeowners who live next door. For those who meet the requirements of the program, these adjacent lots can be purchased for $100 or less, which covers the cost of the legal fees associated with the property transfer. So joining Cincinnati Edition to talk about this program, our City of Hamilton Director of Planning, Liz Hayden. Welcome, Liz.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have with us Mike Dingledine. He's an architect and the executive director of Hamilton's CORE Fund. CORE stands for Consortium for Ongoing Reinvestment Efforts. Mike, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you very much for having us.
And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. So Liz, take us to Hamilton and tell us what's going on specifically in the urban core. It seems in my experience in covering cities that are going through these transformative renaissances that you're able finally to turn your attention to the neighborhoods when the downtown has started to improve. So what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to put it. I know I can just say that I've been in Hamilton since 2012. And when I moved to the downtown area, I moved to right downtown Hamilton. And when I moved there, there were two storefronts that had businesses in them. And now they're pretty much completely full. So it's changed a lot. And we still have a ways to go. Just like everywhere does. But, you know, we realize that we also need to be, we're ready to start getting more aggressive in our neighborhoods and revitalizing our neighborhoods. So that's become a big focus for the city of Hamilton.
What do you see as having served as the catalyst for Hamilton's revitalization?
You know, leadership change, probably. I think that there were a lot of great citizens who were concerned about the direction of that Hamilton was going over as they saw disinvestment over the past few decades, and they got involved. Some of them ran for council. They all were wanting to get to, they had no, it was very altruistic, which is something you don't hear very often with people running for city council. They just wanted to see Hamilton do better, and city manager the community started working together, you know, the city of Hamilton, the community foundation, lots of our big organizations just started working together and want direction to try to change Hamilton.
Mike, we heard Liz say that there were maybe two storefronts operational when she moved to downtown Hamilton, but that may have even been a luxury at one point. As some of the cities in our region have experienced similar circumstances, that just about everything would be gone. Can you take us to some of the, I guess, sadder days of downtown Hamilton when, I mean, it really may have looked hopeless to a lot of people?
It did really look bad. You know, there was still downtown businesses that where we all did our daily work, but at 5 o'clock, you know, the city went dark. And storefronts were dark, and there weren't walk-in businesses. There were no feet on the street, so we were very worried. We had 100 years of industrial wealth that made Hamilton such an incredible place and had incredible urban fabric and buildings that, as an architect, I admired my whole life, but got very frustrated with building owners, legacy building owners, who just let them sort of decay, demolished by neglect, we called it. And so we were looking for a way to reverse that trend, and I knew the building fabric was worthy of it. We just had to find a way to reactivate the storefronts in the street.
And so looking at the buildings that remained, this has been a critical part of the urban revitalization in the region, is that these buildings aren't being torn down so frequently. They are being repurposed. They're being used again. They're being given new lives as residences and commercial opportunities.
Yeah. In fact, I count Hamilton among the lucky few that things weren't very good in the 70s and 80s. So we didn't have urban revitalization projects where we took down blocks. We did a little of that, but mostly the buildings just went dark and went vacant. And so when we did start to revitalize, we still had most of our fabric in place. And that was a huge step forward and positive for us.
What was Hamilton's history? It was a city that was built on a manufacturing base?
Manufacturing base. 1850s, they figured out how to capture hydraulic power from the river north of the city to south of the city. And that allowed early manufacturing businesses, General Dynamics, Niles Tool Works, Champion Paper, Beckett Paper, Mosler Safe, Diebold Safe. We were a capital of all kinds of manufacturing. And that really sustained us because the wealth from those generations lasted into, nearly the turn of the millennium. And so at the turn of the millennium, we realized that the wealth was starting to evaporate and we needed to capture what we could from what was left of that.
And of course, the city of Hamilton is named for Alexander Hamilton, one of our founding fathers, but probably more popularly known now as the namesake of the Broadway musical, yes. Hamilton, and the Broadway tour company that was coming through town, I guess, earlier this year made a stop in Hamilton. So I think you know you're back on the map.
Yeah.
When that show is dancing
cool.
its way into town.
For sure.
So as part of your efforts to continue the ongoing growth in the city of Hamilton, Liz Hayden, you're the director of planning at City Hall. Tell us about this land bank side lot program. I understand when this was initially announced, maybe there was some mischaracterization of the program and people got excited that the city is selling its property for a buck. How
sure.
do we get our hands on it? But
sure.
that's not exactly the case.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated. And I think that sometimes I get used to the world of jargon that I live in and didn't really realize that it, you know, how complicated it really can be. But at the end of the day, you know, the city really doesn't own many buildings, but we do own a lot of lots. And the reason for the increase in the number of lots that we own is because of the land bank. The land bank received funding from the state for the past 6 years or so to acquire distressed built homes and demolish them. So we've been successful and probably have demolished about 270 distressed homes in our community. Now they're lots that we're just mowing. And now that the grant has kind of wrapped up, it's time to start focusing on getting them back into productive use.
We might need an explanation of what a land bank is.
Perfect. So a lot of times when and land banks are very popular tools in communities like Hamilton. The city of Toledo and the city of Cleveland are great kind of examples in Ohio that are using land banks extremely well. But ours is very narrowly focused on acquiring distressed property that is kind of in this community that's, you know, in areas that there's a market failure, I guess, for lack of a better term, that no one wants it on the private market, but it's still sitting there and people are still living next to it. So the land bank creates an opportunity to acquire it, clean the title, which is critical, a major asset to the land bank, and then get it back into productive use. Some places have money to rehab them, but primarily the grant funding that the land bank in Hamilton has been to demolish them.
How is a land bank able to clear those titles? We're probably talking about properties that have a variety of different liens against them, right?
Right. That's a really great question about the inner workings of it. I don't know. I know that there's a lot of legal resources put behind the land bank to make just make sure that it has an opportunity to clean the title, but I don't actually know the inner workings
sure.
of
it. Sure, okay. So how did the city of Hamilton target these properties? How did you go about making the list of properties you wanted to acquire as part of this land bank program?
The main list was properties that have gone to sheriff sale twice and no one bid on them. So literally, no one wanted them. That they in a lot of cases, they had experienced tax foreclosure, and that's why they're going through the sheriff sale. And when the private market didn't want it, the land bank stepped in to acquire them and demolish them. Now, that's not true for all of them, but that's been the primary mechanism. There's been other ones that we knew, let's say, residents have been complaining about people not mowing their grass, that the house needs to be painted, that it's unsecured and people are breaking in over and over again, dumping. Those get on our radar. And then if we realize that if no one really is caring for this property, there might be an opportunity for maybe the owner wants to get rid of it. And then we make contact and have acquired them that way.
Are there particular neighborhoods where there are more of these examples?
Absolutely. So Hamilton has 17 neighborhoods, and I would say that the majority of the 260 or so lots that the land bank has acquired were in about four of the neighborhoods.
Okay, so now you have these properties. You've torn down a lot of these buildings, and you're looking to dump the property onto someone who will take better care of it or more immediate care.
Sure. I mean, it's a win-win because we don't want to take care of the property forever. We estimate all in that it takes about $1,000 a year to maintain these lots. But probably even more importantly, there are neighbors, homeowners that have lived in these, they've lived there for 20 years and they're and they want to expand their yard to put a fence around it to have a place for their kids to play. I mean, that's a win for everyone. We don't want to take care of it, but they are going to do something that really adds value for them and the neighborhood. So we're looking forward to getting these lots to them.
You said $1,000 a year to take care of?
Yes.
So each one, and we're talking hundreds of these.
Correct.
So somewhere between $300,000 and $500,000 the city is spending to maintain these specific properties?
It's about that. It's about $1,000, and we own over 500 lots. So it is, and that's all in staff resources, all of that. It's not direct costs, but it's money that we could do something else with for sure.
Okay. And the way that you're going to be able to do that is by having someone buy these properties next door. And these need to be properties that are directly adjacent.
Correct.
And owner-occupied?
That is what we're focusing. Right now, the rules say owner-occupied, adjacent, and must be in good standing with the city, which means you're paying your utilities, you're paying your property taxes, you don't have any outstanding code violations. So those are that's certainly not going to get rid of all, 500 properties. So, we are, once we're done with that first round, we'll look to see if our rules need to be amended to consider other ways to dispense of the property. But that's our focus right now.
And so what happens, I guess, in terms of opportunity for a purchaser? Is this where someone like Mike is contacted, an architect, and someone says, well, look, I want to acquire this and I want to build something on it?
Yeah, a lot of the lots we own aren't really appropriate for infill development. Going back to the generally, we own over 500 lots, land bank, and other kinds of lots. And I would guess that probably about 10, maybe 20 are appropriate to have a house be built on them.
Although most of them did at one point have a house on
Correct.
Them. The standards have changed, the building standards perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of these, we said they're concentrated in four of our older neighborhoods where houses were built really, really close together. And they were just really small shotgun homes. And so they're just way more appropriate for a side lot.
Okay, what do you do when there's a property that's been owned by the city and it's between two owner-occupied homes and maybe they both express interest?
We would split the lot with them, so they would each get part of it. However, that requires a survey, which can be an expense that's out of reach for some of our residents. So that's been a challenge will be a challenge that we'll have to deal with as we move this forward.
And I understand that you don't allow commercial entities to inquire about this yet.
Correct. This is for owner-occupied neighbors at this point.
Churches are okay, though.
Nonprofits, churches and other kinds of nonprofits are eligible as well. And so we have talked to some that are looking at expanding their parking lot or that kind of thing.
Okay. And Mike Dingledine is an architect and the executive director of Hamilton's Core Fund, which is focusing on revitalizing the urban core of the city of Hamilton. How do you see this type of neighborhood work impacting the vision that city officials have for the downtown area?
Well, I think we always talk about skin in the game, and these lots and owner occupants next to them, they've fought the sort of debilitating blight for so long their interest in putting more skin in their house and their interest in developing additional property and the ability for an owner to say, I can invest the cost of new construction in a neighborhood finally because the neighborhood has been stabilized. So, as an architect, I'm not looking forward to seeing all of our historic fabric taken down, but we've been pretty surgical about it. And the most important thing is we've really improved the attitude in the neighborhoods that they're going up. And so I think the outcome is we are seeing a lot more people attempting to renovate their own houses and a handful of people trying to put new infill housing.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit more about what else is happening in Hamilton as its revitalization continues. And a little later, Are you thinking about scaling back on gift giving this holiday season? We talk about some unique ways to stay in the spirit without being too overwhelmed by material things. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The city of Hamilton's new land bank side lot program is opening up for sale, city-owned vacant lots. But that's only part of the revitalization efforts that are taking place in the city of Hamilton. We are joined by the city's director of planning, Liz Hayden. Liz, thanks for sticking around. And we have Mike Dingledine, an architect and the executive director of Hamilton's CORE Fund. That stands for Consortium for Ongoing Reinvestment Efforts. Hello, Mike. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like to submit a comment for the program today. Mike, tell us about the origin of CORE. It seems similar to other private-public partnership-type organizations that we're seeing pop up across the region, really across the nation, as they try to revitalize urban centers across America.
Yeah, it's a pretty common tool in the toolbox to have a nonprofit sort of take the lead and sort of fashion a way to work with multiple public and private agencies to do things that the public entities can't do by themselves. So we sort of looked at 3CDC and the Northern Kentucky Catalytic Fund as sort of examples that we stood on the shoulders of, but our scale is obviously much different. And so we're a much smaller organization, and I think that's made us a little more nimble, but it's also limited how far we could take it. But
it started with a pretty significant investment from a variety of partners. Can you tell us how much money you put in the bank to start with and who put some in the kitty?
Sure. We have four major partners. As you would expect, the City of Hamilton is a major partner. Our Hamilton Community Foundation, which is a well-endowed philanthropic foundation from our industrial past. And then First Financial Bank and U.S. Bank, who have both large commercial presences in our downtown. We all got together, and I think we invested about $8.5 million in the CORE Fund, and that has been deployed in all kinds of projects from large to small.
Okay, so what was your first project?
Our first project was an empty, dark department store in our downtown. It was an Elder Bierman store. It was the place we all shopped for my entire life, but as it went with commercial big box stores, that one became dark. We looked for other big boxers to go in there. They all told us no way. Then we decided we would break it up into small pieces of pie and start talking to the owner about renting 10,000 square feet here, 10,000 square feet there, or even 2,000 square feet. And he told us it's all or nothing for me. And so we realized we needed site control. We needed to actually control these handful of strategic properties that we could make a decision on how to break things down, how to enter in small leases or large leases, and how to move the building forward, because an all or nothing for 160,000 square foot building was just too hard from a distant ownership.
So what did you end up doing with it?
So we talked to him. As a nonprofit, he was able to donate a piece of the market value of the building. We were able to pay for a piece of the market value of the building, and we owned this giant building with its leaky roof, with its utility bills, with its tax bills, all those things. But we were able to have the building in kind of a place where it was ready to talk to people when they came to town, instead of something that was going to take 6 weeks to acquire some kind of communication with the owner. We were in a position to say, this is what we have. This is what we're willing to do. We have some funds for TI. Tell us what you would like to do in this building. And we wanted to generate foot traffic in downtown. We wanted to generate jobs in downtown. So we were able to do that through the ability to work at it piece by piece.
So the building's finished?
The building is finished. It is probably 65, 70% occupied. The largest tenant is a full floor tenant. It's a call center. Again, lots of people work there, lots of feet on the street, but we have activated the storefronts with a small market, with a couple medical offices, and with a very unique art program in downtown Hamilton for developmentally disabled adults. So we love the fact that it's a very active, lit up street front.
You know, this is a common question that I've seen firsthand in some of the cities as they try to rebuild themselves. what comes first? Do you need a critical mass, or do you need some type of attraction first? So do you go residences first, or do you try to land some business first without all the amenities that typically accompany such a thing? What did you find in your experience as the answer to that question?
That's a great question, and I was always looking for the silver bullet. most people say, you know, jobs come first. You need people on the street. You need income taxes. You need city services. So jobs is the most important. But, you know, jobs aren't going to come before safety and parking and critical retail mass and mixed use and all the things that kind of have to come together. So despite my surprise, Hamilton sort of focused on keeping all the balls in the air, the quality of life balls, but also the jobs, the tax base, the infrastructure, all those conditions. And everybody wants to know, which one do you do first, or which one is the most important? And I guess we were lucky that we kept them all in the air, because I'm not sure that any one of them can be sustained on its own. They all have to kind of – the tide has to rise together.
So when you landed the call center to come downtown, I would imagine that that was probably a significant get for a city that had gone through what Hamilton had gone through. What was the company's justification for choosing Hamilton?
Well, they came to town kind of as a site search team, and they were looking for buildings. And in fact, they weren't even looking for a building in Hamilton. But when they got there, our economic development director, you know, jumped on the chance that we have control of this building. And they remarked that, you know, we controlled the mechanicals, the utilities to the building. We controlled the build out. We controlled the information about where things go and how things work. And we were a downtown that was on its way up. And so they were very surprised. And they, within 2 weeks, had signed a lease. And they said that's usually a 2-month process. And I just think we were ready. We were site ready for a person to come and an opportunity to connect with us. And it was really good fortune.
And so in your line of work, I would imagine that you give consideration to catalytic projects, which is to say this will come and then this other thing will happen because of that.
Right.
What other things have happened because of that Elder Bierman project?
Well, I do believe our ability to sustain storefronts, retail storefronts downtown. You know, I think we went through a 30-year period where, you know, my parents, myself, my kids, there was nothing downtown to do. And they were the first to realize that, you know, these new bookends on the street corners, even small buildings, were having a massive improvement on downtown. And then the most incredible thing for me as a lifetime resident of Hamilton was to see lights on after 5 o'clock. And that was really exciting. And they started to do promotional kind of things. We have a live after 5 on one Thursday a month. And it's filled with people who go, you know, this hasn't happened in Hamilton for, you know, 50 years. And how do we, you know, get connected to all these new things that are happening? So our downtown really did come first. I think that's really important. It gave us a sense of where our health was improving, and it was in our downtown business district.
And Liz Hayden is the director of planning at the city of Hamilton. I'm sorry about your cough. It's okay. It happens. It happens to me too on the air every now and then, and then it just doesn't stop. But if you need some more water, we can bring some of that in.
Tis the season.
Tis the season indeed. Don't worry about coughing at all. Our listeners have heard that before. But I do want to ask, because you had referenced, you know, as we talked earlier about the land bank program, whether some of the residents that might be appropriately targeted for this, whether they could afford something extra like surveying. So we're talking about some low-income people living in Hamilton. I'm wondering if the redevelopment of downtown has impacted some of the lower-income folks as well. Is there any displacement taking place?
You know, that's such a hot-button issue, and it's one of those that I feel like it's really hard to have that conversation. What I can tell you is that we are a – especially CORE, which is the main driver for change, is – very focused, very targeted, pretty much has acquired mostly buildings that are either vacant or in a couple times there's been some high profile problem properties. And we really haven't seen direct displacement. And we really think that we still think it, in Hamilton, it's critically important to bring people back into our community that have and to have mixed income neighborhoods. You know, Mike and I both live in historic districts in Hamilton that are mixed income. And we were talking on the way down here about how important it is to live in these mixed income neighborhoods where our kids are all going to school together and you have all these different people interacting together. And without the revitalization that CORE is bringing to the table, I think we were losing the opportunity to bring more people into our community to have those mix of incomes. I mean, German Village is one of the target districts that CORE is working in. And I think when CORE started there, I want to say the home ownership rate was like 7%. So, you know, that's where we're start. That's our baseline. We have a long way to go, you know, and we're and homeowners, regardless of income, are the people who call the cops. They're the people who care what's going on in the neighborhood. And we're really proud of what we're doing in our neighborhoods.
I've always found Hamilton to be of particular interest in terms of urban revitalization because Dayton's a big city, Cincinnati's a big city, and they have all the amenities that come with that sort of thing. And Mike, you referenced the Catalytic Fund in Northern Kentucky, which assists the river cities of Covington and Newport and their neighboring riverfront communities. But they also have the advantage of being directly next to Cincinnati, so they get to capitalize on the amenities offered in another city, whereas Hamilton is kind of in the middle of these two metro areas and has to stand on its own in ways that the Northern Kentucky cities would not have to do. So, Mike, who's coming to Hamilton?
That's a great question. We are getting about the same number of people leaving town every day for a job as coming to town every day for a job. And I think that's pretty interesting that it's about 17,000 people coming and going. And it's interesting that we have that job base, and we do, and we're working well on it. But Hamilton's cost and its historic character and cost of living, you know, fit very well for in between the Cincinnati and Dayton Metroplex. And so I think there's a lot of Miami professors who live in Hamilton. There's a lot of people who drive to Dayton, a lot of people who drive to Cincinnati. And frankly, those of us who live in the city, you know, really appreciate how the quality of life has come up. There's new restaurants. There's the Fitton Center for Creative Arts. There's Pyramid Hill Sculpture Park. We can actually, you know, have a very interesting sort of big city quality of life that's been developing in the last 10 to 20 years in Hamilton.
What's the next big thing we're going to hear about?
Well, Spooky Nook is the news. I mean, it's a great big thing. It's going to draw, you know, 6,000 to 10,000 people every weekend. The good news for us, as people lament the idea of traffic and visitors, is it's going to drive more success in businesses, more retail, more restaurants, more quality of life opportunities for everybody in Hamilton, not just the visitors.
Remind our listeners what that means.
What?
Spooky Nook.
Oh, it's a sports complex. It's a indoor complex, 680,000 square feet, includes hotels and conference center space, but indoor sports fields that gives you access to year-round tournaments. Developed by a man named Sam Beiler out of Pennsylvania. He has one of those complexes out there that he developed. It's just an amazing thing to see. It's shock and awe in terms of walking inside and seeing 20 basketball courts under roof or, you know, two football fields or a giant soccer stadium. And those are things that just, again, draw lots of people from about a 300-mile radius because sports activities and family engagement has become, you know, really big. And he sees that 300-mile reach. That includes for us St. Louis and Chicago and Pittsburgh and Cleveland and Nashville. So that idea that Hamilton is the epicenter of that kind of activity is really exciting for us.
Liz Hayden is the director of planning at the City of Hamilton, and Mike Dingeldine is the executive director of the CORE Fund in Hamilton. I appreciate both of you coming in and chatting with us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.